This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio. Today we're going to be talking about Iraq and about the increasing number of U.S. soldiers who are going AWOL. With me in the studio is one such soldier, Carl Webb. Carl Webb, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me about your background a little bit.
Well, I'm 39 years old. I've been in and out of the military since 1982. I've been in Army Reserves, Army National Guard, served 7 years on active duty. This last time, I had a 7-year break in service from about 1994 up until 2001, when I thought things were relatively quiet and peaceful and that we had invaded everybody we could possibly invade.
This was before September 11th.
Yes. In fact, it was August of 2001. So very bad timing.
Why did you decide to go back into the service?
It was an economic decision. I was in need of some quick cash, and there was a big bonus.
What was the bonus? What did they offer?
Actually, it wasn't that big. It was only $2,500, but I was several thousand dollars in debt, and that was going to help a great deal.
And what were your views, your political views, before, like, for instance, the Gulf War, the first Gulf War? Was that something you were in favor of or opposed to?
No, I wasn't. I've always been anti-war. I just thought this would be a quick three-year tour in the National Guard, one, you know, weekend, a month, and it would be over and easy.
So you went back in August 2001, then September 11th happened. What was your immediate response to that?
Oh, well, shock. And for the next 3 years, I was on pins and needles. Until the summer of 2004, when I thought my time was up, and I was ecstatic. I was really happy.
So you were in the Texas National Guard, and that meant weekends? What did that mean?
That meant 2 weeks in the summer and one weekend every month.
And it looked like you were just about through.
Right.
And then what happened?
Well, a month before my last drill, I get a call from my sergeant saying she has bad news. She says, you have been activated. I said, what, the unit has been called up? She says, no, you've been stop lost. You're not going to be permitted to end your contract.
Tell us what stop loss means.
Well, essentially, it makes null and void any contract you've signed with the U.S. military. Typically, people sign a contract for 3, 4, 5, 6 years or whatever. But the law in place now says that the military can involuntarily extend any contract that you have.
And Rumsfeld's been involuntarily extending a lot of soldiers. Thousands, isn't it?
Tens of thousands.
Tens of thousands. And it's a kind of indentured servitude. I mean, people against their will and against the promise are being kept over. But there must be some small print that allows him to do that. Do you know what that is?
I've heard about the small print. I probably read it at some point in time, but I can't say it verbatim.
And how did you respond when the sergeant told you about this?
Well, first, shock and denial. I thought maybe they typed in the wrong name, the computer crashed, and something went wrong.
And you decided at some point that you weren't going to return. How did you make that decision?
Well, that was automatic. Going to Iraq was not an option for me. That same night, I sent an email to many of the anti-war listservs that I belong to, and we started going over my options.
What were those options?
Well, of course, the first one that jumped into my head was to run to Mexico. Since I was in Texas, that's closer than Canada.
And you have friends in Mexico? That was a possibility, or you just thought it was the closest place to go?
That was my first option, was to run. I had no friends there, no family. I'd visited Mexico before, but no, I had no connections.
So that wasn't a great option. What were some of the others?
Well, the other option was to apply for CO status, which means conscientious objection. And, well, I knew that more than likely I was not going to get granted that, because you actually have to be a conscientious objector, and I'm not a pacifist. I had never inquired before, even in my youth, because I figured, you had to be a Jehovah's Witness or something along that lines. But I had inquired, a few months prior to getting out, just in case, because I knew that, this could happen. So I talked to my sergeant. I said, well, tell me something about the rules, because I never inquired, because I'm actually an atheist. And she said, oh, no, it's a very secular thing. You just have to have a very deep conviction against any type of organized violence.
Now, you call yourself an anti-war activist, but you're not a pacifist. Do you want to explain that?
Well, my objection is political. The stipulations for conscientious objection clearly state that you can't have, you don't have to be religious, but you cannot have a political objection.
And it has to be a universal disapproval of war. You can't say I'm for one war, not for another.
Correct. You have to be against all types of organized violence. So.
And how long have you been an anti-war activist?
Oh, well, just about all my life, 20 years.
And wasn't it weird to be in the service, even though you were anti-war?
It's a typical contradiction. Most people in the service do not join the service for patriotic, blind patriotic ideas. I would say most people in the service, at best, are apolitical.
But some
and are both.
Some are gung-ho, though, and macho.
Yes, I'd say 10%.
Mm-hmm.
Not that many.
I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to Progressive Radio. I'm speaking with Carl Webb, who is a soldier who's AWOL right now. And we are speaking about his personal experience, and there are many others like him who are similarly situated right now. Carl, you said Mexico really wasn't an option. Becoming a CO wasn't an option. So what were you left with?
Well, as regarding that second option, I was actually going to go ahead and apply, even though there was a possibility that I most likely I would be denied. My thinking was, well, at least that'll stall them from deploying me. But from conversations with other soldiers that had gone through the process, I learned that just simply filing or asking for this status does nothing to stop your deployment. Jeremy Hinsman, who you may have known, is one of the soldiers up in Canada that just got denied refugee status by the Canadian courts. Actually served a whole year in Afghanistan while his paperwork was being processed, only to come back home and have it denied, and then was going to be sent to Iraq. So I immediately, nixed that option.
So you decided to go AWOL.
Yes, I called the GI Rights Hotline and the Center for Conscientious Objection and some other anti-war resources around the country, and I was made aware that people that go AWOL can later turn themselves in and possibly get a bad conduct discharge or maybe do some jail time. And I said I'd rather go to jail than go to Iraq.
Now, I actually heard you tried to turn yourself in several times. Why'd you do that? Or is that true?
Well, yes, there is a... It's something similar to an amnesty program. There are two bases in the U.S. where soldiers can voluntarily turn themselves back over to military control and then request what is called a discharge in lieu of court-martial. It's kind of... It's a gamble, because if they're really vindictive, they could just go ahead and court-martial you. But usually what happens is those soldiers that they don't feel they can reintegrate or rehabilitate back into the Army, they give them usually a bad or less than honorable discharge and just, wash their hands of them. So that's what I was hoping for.
But what happened when you present yourself?
Well, I kept calling. It was a 1-800 number to the deserter information point at Fort Knox, Kentucky, and every time I called, they had no knowledge of me. They said they hadn't received any paperwork from my unit. Initially, I thought, again, you know, large bureaucracy, things get lost, records fell down, you know, fell down a file cabinet or the computer crashed, and I kept waiting.
And nothing happened?
And nothing happened.
And what's your explanation for that?
Well, I was baffled. I had never gone AWOL before. And then I called the GRI hotline and said, hey, well, you guys advised me and it's not going to plan. He said, well, this is typical. And the only thing that they can theorize is that the military doesn't have the resources to round up and process all these soldiers. I think they're admitting to 6,000 soldiers being AWOL. And also, they want to avoid publicity. So they just keep people on the books, you know, make themselves look good on paperwork so they don't have to admit that, you know, no one's missing, and then later, you know, give them a discharge.
So it's not like the Army is going after you right now and you have to worry about, you know, who's over your shoulder or who's behind you or anything.
No. In fact, most of the soldiers that have really gone public with their resistance, none of them were caught. They all held press conferences and turned themselves in. You know, example, Camilo Mejia.
Tell me what your objection is to this Iraq war.
Well, as I stated before, it's overtly political. I do not believe that this country went to war for the excuses that they're putting out in their propaganda. The idea of us exporting democracy or actually defending this country. You know, the president has already come on TV. You know, admit it. You know, not that they can't find any weapons of mass destruction, but there are no weapons of mass destruction. The links between Iraq and Al-Qaeda in 9/11, false. I guess we could still claim that we're trying to export democracy with those fraudulent elections that I don't see how anybody could think were in any way legitimate given, you know, our history of elections.
Carl Webb, what do you think the real reason is the United States or George W. Bush is in Iraq?
Oh, it's economics and politics there. It's the Middle East. We're going to run out of oil soon. You know, perfect place to take over.
And how do you see the war going there? I mean, it seems like there's just a huge mess right now, and the United States has lost 1,675 or more soldiers, and that's going up all the time, and 12,000 U.S. soldiers have been wounded, and between 20,000 and 100,000 or more Iraqi civilians have died, and it just seems like chaos every day over there. What is the trajectory of this war occupation?
Well, I think it's going to go very similar to what Vietnam, the way Vietnam went. They're going to claim, you know, they have some plan to withdraw, and it's going to escalate and escalate. And I feel that this backdoor draft that, you know, they're using to hold all of these old soldiers in the service is a way of avoiding instituting a draft.
And what's your take on that? I mean, should there be a draft? Some people say there should be a draft because it's more egalitarian. That if the United States is going to war, there shouldn't be an economic draft. There shouldn't be a backdoor draft. Everyone should go be drafted. And then there are some anti-imperialists who say if there's a draft, the likelihood of the United States fighting more imperial wars will go down. How do you wrestle with those?
No, I don't believe in a draft at all. I believe there shouldn't be a war. You know, you don't need to discuss whether or not we have a volunteer army or a draft or whatever if you, you know, go at the root cause and say, hey, you know, stop these wars.
How are you being received when you're going around the country? You're at the tail end of a tour right now. What reception do you get?
Very well, just as I anticipated. It's already come out, even in the mainstream media, that the majority of this country is opposed to the war. I think a lot of us on the left actually even overestimate the degree that this country is conservative. I've had people say, well, you know, you're going to get beat up. People are going to, throw things at you. And I've been received very well. I haven't had any You know, I've gotten a nasty letter every once in a while, right. A nasty gram on the email, but that's about it.
And I listened to you on a radio show a few days ago where you got a couple tough questions from a guy, one from a guy in the service, another from someone else. The guy in the service, real macho, kind of gung-ho guy, said, essentially, look, buddy, you signed up. Now you're going back on your promise. You're a disgrace to the service. You're leaving your buddies behind. How come you can get out a cowardly way and everyone else has to fight? How do you rebut those kinds of attacks?
Well, I just made an analogy. I said, I think a lot of German working class youth in the 1940s probably heard a lot of the same things while they were running away from the German army.
What is the analogy, or is there any, between the Nazis and where we are right now?
The analogy being that we're not on the right side. We're on the wrong side. We invaded this country under false pretenses, and the real reasons are that it's a colonial project. It's an endeavor to take over a country, you know, and take control of their resources. And it has nothing to do with exporting democracy or defending the U.S.
See, I think that's probably a better analogy than the Nazi one. I mean, I think this is a colonial enterprise. This is like traditional colonialism, except with a new rationale over it. I tend to steer clear of Nazi comparisons, though I understand the good soldier analogy you're making, simply because it reduces the historical uniqueness that was the Holocaust and was German Nazism. And it's such a cheapened coin now to say everything that's terrible is like Hitler, like Nazi Germany. So I tend to resist that. But I do think it's kind of a traditional colonial experience, or like France was in Algeria, or similar to what the U.S. was in Vietnam. And the answer, if history is a guide, is that at some point the U.S. had to get out of Vietnam. France had to get out of Algeria. When do you see, or how do you see, the United States getting out of Iraq?
Well, unfortunately, similar to what happened in Vietnam, when more and more American citizens start coming home in body bags or in wheelchairs or blinded or with mental problems, maybe the public will wake up and join my protest.
But right now, even as you suggested, there is a majority of Americans who think that this war isn't worth the cost. It's somewhere around 60%. A majority think that it's not making us even more secure, which is now the kind of fallback position other than importing or exporting democracy. And so here in our own democracy, so to speak, you would think that the people ruled. But here, when a majority of people are against the war, Bush shows no sign of relenting. I mean, this guy, in my view, unless something dramatic happens, is going to continue to wage this war till the last minute he's in office on January 20th, the year 2009. What will it take to make George W. Bush change course?
Wow, that's that's all right question. Well, I think that it's going to be a mass protests. I mean, the whole country is going to have to. I mean, he basically doesn't care what we think, as long as we're complacent, you know. And that's the same for the military. Like I said, most soldiers I know are against this war. They just do, you know, they're just following the orders, and the commanders don't care what they think. Nothing's going to move them until we organize as a collective and force them to move. There's no appealing to, you know, their good conscience, you know.
You know, it's hard to appeal to the conscience of people who are without conscience, like Rumsfeld or Bush. Boy, it'd be hard to see how to or Cheney, who had his conscience surgically removed about three decades ago, seems to me. I'm wondering, as an African-American, how the reception has been to your going AWOL, because African-Americans before the war and after the war started have been opposed to the war at much higher percentages than other Americans. Have you been received warmly within the African-American community?
Yes. But, you know, like we talked about before, there's not not in a direct correlation between what people think and their actions. I would probably say that most communities of color, the opposition to the war has always been higher.
But why is that?
The level of activism. Why do I think that?
Yeah. I mean it's true. The level of opposition has been greater. What's the explanation for that?
I think it has a historical background. I was giving a talk to a class, and one of the reasons we give, you know, for going to Iraq is that, well, we're protecting the Kurdish minorities. You know, if you're a person of color, I would especially guess a Native American person here in Wisconsin on an Indian reservation, that idea that we're going thousands of miles away to protect a minority in the Middle East from a majority is nonsense. You know, so yeah, naturally, you know, people like that are going to be more suspect than the mainstream crowd.
And you've been talking to African-American media people, too. Are you getting decent stories coming out of there as well?
Yes. I've been not only have I been talking to the media, but I've also been going around to schools and churches, recreation centers, coffee houses, anywhere, you know, I can, you know, find an audience.
I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to Progressive Radio. My guest today is Carl Webb, a soldier who has gone AWOL. Carl Webb, do you encourage other soldiers to follow suit?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I tell people not to, you know, think in the box. You're going to have to think outside the box. I know a lot of anti-war activists, you know, counsel youth on how to file, you know, applications for conscientious objector or to do some other different national service. But ultimately, you're going to, you know, have to take some extreme measures, and running away is one of those measures. That's what people did during the Vietnam War. 100,000 of our citizens left for Canada and other countries during that war. And unless there's some revolutionary change in our government, that's what's going to happen again.
And do you see the government ever cracking down on people like you who've gone AWOL?
It's kind of hard to say. Like I say, they're caught between a rock and a hard place. They are afraid to, you know, implement some draconian measures, you know, because that's going to look bad in the publicity. You know, just think about it, going around and locking up 6,000 soldiers and throwing away the key. That's going to make the news. Right now, they can keep it under the cover by, well, you know, 6,000 is not a whole lot, given that we have 750,000 soldiers under arms. So it seems like they're just trying to bide their time and keep things under cover.
What's your reaction to the problem that the military is having recruiting right now?
Well, that's going to be one of the major ways to put pressure on them. And part of my anti-war activism has been counter-recruitment and anti-draft activism.
And this is happening on campuses around the country, too. I know there are counter-recruitment rallies and protests. How are you engaging with that?
Well, many of my friends in the anti-war movement are also teachers, so they you know, they contact their co-workers and say, hey, you know, we got a guy, we have Iraq Veterans Against War, Veterans for Peace, many different organizations, Vietnam Veterans Against the Iraq War, that are going around and willing to talk to the youth in your class, willing to, you know, set up literature tables outside the high schools right next to the recruiters, willing to debate recruiters in the classroom.
And you see more and more of this happening right now?
Oh, definitely. It's going to grow.
Tell me what your plan is over the next few months. Where do you see? Are you just going to bop around from place to place, or what are your plans?
Well, I would like to go back to Texas. I contacted my unit. I had a lawyer via the National Lawyers Guild, which has a subunit called the Military Law Task Force. And he called my rear detachment. Every unit that's in Iraq has a few people left back here in the States for administrative purposes. And he called, and they didn't want to cooperate with him. They didn't want to talk to him. They only wanted to talk to me. I sent an email. They didn't want to respond online because they noticed I have a tendency to post anything they say on my website. So my lawyer said, no, well, finally, just go talk to the guy. And that's the only way we're going to communicate. So I called, and he said, well, what do you want to do? And I was kind of shocked. I says, well, obviously, I want to get out of the service. You're holding me against my will beyond my contract. And he said, no problem. That's all we have to do is some paperwork. Just make sure you've turned in your rifle and your gas mask and all this kind of stuff. And we'll give you an honorable discharge. And not only that, he said, we're going to backdate the paperwork to August of 2004. So it'll seem as if you were never missing.
Now, is this some sort of a trap or what's going on?
I don't know. He told me off the record that they do this all the time. Soldiers go missing, non-commissioned officers, and they just basically keep them on the books because it looks good. And, you know, after a certain amount of time passes, they just, you know, erase them, you know, give them a discharge.
So your inclination right now, Carl Webb, is to test this hypothesis. And to go back to Texas and try to get your discharge and see if they're going to be good on their word?
That's about it. And also, you know, to keep on networking with the media.
It's risky, though.
Yes, and things like this are kind of a... Because most people say, oh, wow, that's you know, a success. I says, well, no, that's one way of them keeping a lid, you know, on things. You know, they're only admitting the 6,000... soldiers having deserted, but maybe that's because they're not even reporting, you know, all those that don't show up.
So it's a better PR strategy for them than to crack down, but still, it's on the individual level, on each individual soldier like you who goes AWOL, for you to try to get this discharge when they can come down on you like a ton of bricks, that's a little dicey. There's no fear on your part?
Well, of course there's fear, but I have to counterbalance that with, you know, being an activist, and that entails taking some risk, you know.
Carl Webb, we have only about a minute left, and I wanted you to give listeners some resources that they can go to. You've mentioned a couple in the course of this conversation, the National Lawyers Guild, the GI Rights Hotline, I think the Central Committee on Conscientious Objectors. I'm sure AFSC, American Friends Service, has some. Are there other groups you'd encourage people to go to?
WeWon'tGo.org, NoDraftNoWay.org, of course, Veterans for Peace. Go online and Google any of the numerous veterans organizations that have joined this anti-war.
And how could people stay in touch with you if they wanted to?
Well, they can take a look at my website, which is carlwebb.net, carlwebb.net.
Well, thanks so much for being my guest today on Progressive Radio, and good luck.
Thank you.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.